from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Joel, I'm Jeremy. It is a Thursday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Astros winning the third game of the four-game series last night. Boy, that was good to see in a variety of different ways. The offense was clicking. Your boy, your baseball crush, Jake Meyers, homered for the fifth time.
My dude.
Marwin Gonzalez did the improbable. He homered as a lefty against a righty. And Kyle Tucker with another Kyle driver continuing his he's just raking right now. He's been raking every all season long outside of the first month of the season where he's hitting into a lot of bad luck. And, oh, yeah, Jose Urquidy was dominant. We were talking about this yesterday. What do we need to see from Jose Urquidy? His last start, his second start off of the IL. The velo was a little bit lower than we saw on his first start. Well, 81 pitches yesterday, Joel. Gave up one run over six innings. Gave up just two hits, struck out six. That was a vintage Jose Urquidy. That's the Jose Urquidy that gives you confidence in the postseason.
No doubt. I mean, do you need to see anything more out of Jose Urquidy? We were talking about guys we need to see more of, or after one good and one bad start, this next one would be telling. Just like when we were looking at Grinke down the stretch, we needed to see something from Urquidy. We saw everything we needed to see last night. Because now, you think about this. If Kyle Tucker makes that catch, which legitimately he had a glove on and probably could have made, he would have had a no-no going into that the last hit he gave up in the sixth. Mm-hmm. So he was dominant. I mean, he didn't seem to be dominant. It was like the most subtle way you could be dominant. But he...
Quiet dominance?
Yes, he was in control of all of his pitches. As the guys astutely said on the telecast, he never looks like he gets his blood pressure up until the final out. He got that final out in the sixth, and he let it all out with a scream and a fist pump. Like, you know what? I did this. It was great.
It was Garcia who's just been torching the Astros this season. You could tell the game plan for Urquidy and the Astros with Garcia was fastball up, fastball yes. up, fastball up, and Urquidy was able to execute the pitch. I honestly, like, I'm not used to seeing that kind of fire and excitement from Jose Urquidy. I was scared he got hurt in that moment because he, like...
I'm with you.
Because he did this you know, this move out of excitement and happiness that I've never seen him do before. I was like, oh no, did Jose Urquidy just get hurt again? But he was just fired up. I love Jose Urquidy, by the way. And it's just like,
is that your man crush?
I think so. I think I love Jose Urquidy. I literally love Jose Urquidy.
Okay.
But remember, like, earlier this season, even when he was hurt, like, he was out there. Was it the car wash? Some charity thing that they were doing, and they were asking him about, whoa, what do you think about what's going on? Oh. And other teams talking. So, well, we're going to the World Series. Yeah. So what? And I do love his calmness. I love how he has that calm presence. Nothing seems to faze him. And if you look up his playoff numbers, by the way, his playoff numbers are amazing.
Like, they were showing them last night on the telecast.
I don't love overreacting to one game, and I know we're doing that now because there's 17 games left in the regular season. The playoffs are right around the corner. We have this conversation every single day. What is the Astros pitching rotation going to look like in the playoffs? I don't know about you, but Jose Urquidy jumped up on my confidence meter over Zach Greinke. Like, he's right there on the cusp of Framber Valdez, too. Like, I'm not sure I want him as my number one or number two starter, but Urquidy's certainly number three. I'm not sold, though. I want him to start game three. He might be, like, the guy that is needed. If I have to go to the bullpen in the fifth, sixth inning, or if I go extra innings in game one or two, like, I don't mind the Jose Urquidy weapon out of the bullpen in a must-have scenario because he's pitching so well, and he's one of the best pitchers on this team.
No, you're right. And I don't know that I'm ready to have him surpass Greinke, but it's a good problem to have mm-hmm. because we're so worried about the back end of the starting five in terms of having to double up and have split starts. Because of the fact that most of the guys can't go more than five or don't seem to be capable to keep the pitch count down and be effective, that at least you've got another guy now that went over 70 pitches, which was his limit previously. He looked like he was in control the entire time. Like you said, he's got a great playoff resume, too, that says that he's been there, done that, so why can't he do it again? So it's a good problem to have if you got four guys right now and you're a lot to be told tonight with Framber. I want to see Framber on the hill tonight, and the things that I'm looking for, and I'm sure we'll get to this again, but just like we were looking for Urquidy, velocity up and also control and the amount of pitches and how deep in a game can he go. From Framber's perspective, get out of that first inning, okay, because it's been the first or second inning has been hellacious for him lately. And then control your breaking pitches. His breaking pitches are above average and some of the best in the game when he has control of them and can place them. When he can't, he gets hit and hit hard. So you need to watch these things because maybe instead of Greinke, we're talking about Framber, where you pencil in Urquidy, depending on how much control Fromber has going down the stretch.
I think right now for me, I'm in the mindset of I know three of my starters, and I want the first two to be any combination of McCullers and Fromber. I don't really care which way. Everybody's leaning towards McCullers because he's pitching the best right now. But if it's game one or game two, to me, it doesn't matter a whole lot, in my opinion. Although you want to get off to that 1-0 lead in game one. That does a lot for confidence. Jose Urquidy's the third starter that I have the most trust in, but I'm not sure I want to pencil him into that third game just yet. Like, if you're in a spot in game one or two where, let's say, McCullers is getting hit hard, but you've already scored tons of runs, and you need three or four, like, really quality innings to take a 1-0 lead in the series, I don't mind using Urquidy in that spot. I don't mind using him if it goes to the 10th inning. Same thing with game two. Like, I have the thought in my mind that Jose Urquidy is going to be my game three or game four starter, but if I need to use him in game one or two, I'm willing to go there.
Yeah, I still think from a Greinke perspective, I go back to what I said yesterday, I believe in a guy that's been there, done that. He has experience. He is the most intelligent pitcher on the staff in terms of thinking through every single pitch and really knowing that it's not just throwing, it's pitching. And that is such a key when you're in a playoff situation, when every pitch matters, when every situation could turn into a high leverage situation. You need a guy like Zach Greinke. And also because of the last memories we all have of him was just absolutely dominating a game seven for 5+ innings in the World Series when you go, okay, that's enough for me to think he can think his way through some of these situations. That's why I still have him up there. But the one thing that we're not talking about with Urquidy with all these positives is he still can't get away from the fact he's had the same injury twice to the same shoulder. So as good as he looked last night, how long will that last? You hope the rest of the season. You hope this time the medical staff got it right, or at least got it to the point where he's not going to have it bother him until after the season. Then you take care of it. But you just don't know.
Yeah, you don't know. Here was Dusty Baker after the game yesterday talking about what he saw from Jose Urquidy.
Just as his command, and he maintained his velocity, throughout the whole game. The last time out, his velocity dropped into like a third or fourth, but it shows that his arm strength's coming back. And he had a very good changeup, and his slider was good. And just an overall good performance, but I was more impressed with the fact that he kept his velocity.
Yeah, it was good to see that from Urquidy. Certainly gives you confidence heading into the postseason. I have a little bit of crow to eat. I saw the lineup yesterday. I wasn't thrilled with the fact that Alex Bregman and Carlos Correa were both off on the same day. I thought that was bizarre. I also thought it was a little bizarre that you give Marwin Gonzalez a start against a righty when he's been terrible against righties this season. What does Marwin Gonzalez do? He hits a home run. So I got to eat some crow today. Dusty Baker knew what he was doing. Other news, Michael Brantley placed on the IL. It's never great to have somebody go on the injured list, but it seems like Brantley's kind of more day-to-day. They wanted to bring a pitcher up because the bullpen's been used a little bit. Brantley, a veteran, he came off the IL really well earlier this season. Like, he's the guy that going to the IL, maybe it's not the worst thing in the world because he can get off those legs a little bit, kind of regroup in time for the playoffs. So, while I don't like seeing it, he's the one where it kind of makes some sense.
Yeah, it all kind of fell together for Dusty last night because otherwise he could have been scrutinized, especially coming off a complete stinker offensively. You're like, well, what are you doing now? I mean, it's one thing to rest guys when they're hot. It's another thing to rest, the entire left side of your infield that are really hitting the ball well right now, maybe better than anybody except Altuve, and you're going to sit both of them on a night that you're coming off a complete just crap the bed job. So it had me concerned, but then it's like the minute that they went back-to-back and Marwin was the second jack, I'm like, well, Dusty's going to get all the credit in the world now because people are going to go, boy, he played that one to a T. Did he? Or did he just play a hunch that worked out?
It's easy to play the hindsight game, right? It's easy to play the hindsight 2020. It doesn't make sense even to me right now, even though Marwin homered yesterday, to give them both the day off whenever you could, rest one yesterday, rest one today. Ledmus Diaz would be your starter for both of them in back-to-back days. But, hey, you get the victory against Texas. It all works out. One other thing is we, nitpick this lineup. I think Dusty Baker might be tipping his hand a little bit on who he likes more in center field. Jake Meyers playing center over Chaz McCormick, and then also where they were in the batting order. You notice Jake Meyers was batting sixth, Chaz was batting eight, even against a righty. Like, we've been talking about this platoon. Chaz hits righties better than Jake Meyers does. Well, Dusty Baker, against a righty yesterday, had Meyers in the sixth spot ahead of Chaz in the eighth spot, and then Jake Meyers homered, by the way.
It paid off, and I was thinking about it even before he homered, going, okay, Dusty, this is the start of the stretch run where you just leave the kid in center field. Because as you and I were talking about, I think, texting off air, the biggest problem that I have with Jake Meyers and the fact that people were nitpicking when he suddenly went down a little bit, dipped under 300, was a kid that young has to play every day. And it's one thing because he's already been tinkered with, and Dusty didn't want to play him early on, whether he admits it or not. So he was only putting him in against closers, you know, raw off the bench, cold as can be, striking out, everybody going, this kid can't play, and Dusty was happy with it. All of a sudden, you put him in the lineup, start getting him at bats, starts getting him some consistent play in the outfield as well, and suddenly he's ripping the cover off of it, and you shouldn't sit him down, but yet you do. This is the point where you realize, whether it be because Chaz's bat has again continued to be very hot or very cold, and right now he's not hitting the ball, you look at it and you go, this is exactly why from now until the end of the regular season, unless something happens that just drastically comes out and jumps out and says, I can't play this kid in the playoffs, he needs to start in center field every day.
I was looking at the numbers this morning, and not to get too stat heavy, but the argument for Chaz McCormick is that he hits righties better than Jake Meyers. They're very comparable now after last night's game. Jake Meyers, the hotter hand, too. Also good news, White Sox losing to the Angels yesterday, so now you're up two games on Chicago. Only 4.5 behind Tampa, and you have three against them. And keep in mind, Tampa plays Toronto.
Yeah, that's coming up, I was going to say. And they, you know, there's a chance with their schedule down the stretch. They have the Yankees quite a bit. They have the Blue Jays. They've got and then like I said, that Astros series where there's three games squeezed in between the A's coming down the stretch in the final week of the season, that could end up being the deciding factor between the number one seed, between the Rays and the Astros if they play their cards right. That's why just one game at a time, but keep doing what you're doing. Win the series tonight, get a good outing from Fromber, keep the offense hot, and then just keep taking care of business, series by series, game at a time, and you could be in a really good spot coming down the stretch.
Astros up 7 on Oakland, 7.5 on Seattle with 17 games.
Over.
Left to play. It's over, huh? Coming up next, Baker Mayfield with good things to say about Tyrod Taylor and how the Cleveland quarterback situation could be similar to another. But first, a minute on Pro Dunk Hoops. Best basketball, Joel, in the planet. It's the best in the business. I've seen a ton of them, and no one does it better than Pro Dunk Hoops. Tempered glass backboard gives you that true off-the-glass feel. Adjustable goals, 5 feet, all the way up to 10, anywhere in between. And they have the competition-grade breakaway rim that's perfect for dunking and keeping you safe. They're sturdy, they're strong, stainless steel fasteners, thicker steel, and exclusive rust armor. They do all the work, too. Let them do all of the installation. They'll come out, Pro Dunk Hoops professionally installs the goal at the perfect height. It's perfectly straight. You don't lift a finger. Let the pros at Pro Dunk Hoops do the work for you. They come in a variety of sizes and options. It'll be the perfect fit for your driveway or yard. Call Pro Dunk Hoops now at 281-351-9822 and visit ProDunkHoops.com. That's ProDunkHoops.com.
ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. If you want to get in, call or text HRMP listener line. Got a texter saying, Joel, you can't give Dusty any credit. Got to win while giving two good players a night off. Can't you give Dusty a little bit of love?
Okay, you're the one that hates Dusty Baker. I'm the one that just honestly said how it was going to go if it went the other way, that he would have faced a lot of scrutiny and criticism because he did what he did. I am frustrated, and I will not change my opinion for you, 832-620, who won't put a name on a text message to own it and be in a real conversation. I am going to hold my position forever and a day to say when a guy is red hot, Dusty always sits him down and says, now's a great time to rest. I disagree with that vehemently, and I will never change my opinion. Last night could have been one where he would have been scrutinized because the night before they were so bad offensively, and he sat arguably his two hottest hitters, but it worked out for him, okay? So we've addressed it, even though you didn't put a name on it. Next time, either own up to it, man up, or get out.
I like how they sent that to you and not me, because I am probably, of the two of us, the bigger Dusty hater. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776.
Now, by the way, Dell, I want you in on this, too. I've gotten to the bottom of yesterday's mystery. If you missed it towards the end of the show yesterday, as we were getting ready to turn it over to the wheelhouse, I looked below the desk, to which I found the remnants of a crime scene that where a murder must have been committed, because there were tissues full of blood jammed under the desk where I sit. So when we started to figure out what was going on, Dell, you took absolutely no ownership and said you won't be responsible for the guys you used to work with. And to some degree, I understand that. So I took pictures of it before I actually was the one that cleaned the crime scene so that the wheelhouse didn't deal with it. I threw it away. But then I sent those pictures to Lance Zierlein, who has notoriously been the guy that is a complete pigpen slob over here. Okay?
Is he notorious for that?
Oh, my God. Dell will tell you the same thing. I used to complain about it all the time because I used to follow those guys. And when I came in, he would leave half-consumed coffee cups. He would leave his headphones plugged in on volume 36. He would leave wrappers. He would leave all this other stuff, and he wouldn't clean it up.
Dell was nodding his head yes, by the way.
Yeah, to all of this. So I waited. So I sent that picture and text at 2:57 before I left the studio. At 3:30, I got a response. And this is from Lance. After I said, I sent all the Kleenex to the lab for DNA results because what you left me today was unacceptable with the pictures. He sent back, oh my God, that was a mosquito bite that turned into a bloody leg. I'm so sorry about that. I totally forgot I left it out there.
It wasn't out there. It was in there.
It was in there. There was multiples. At least he owned it and apologized for it this time. But, like, what kind of mosquito bite provides a pint of blood in a tissue?
That's what I was worried about. Like, it looked like a crime scene, not a mosquito bite.
Like Tyler said, I guess he's really getting into disc golf. Evidently, he can't keep it in the fairway. I'm going, something must have happened, or the mosquito was the size of an eagle. I don't know, but I'm like, at least we got to the crime sleuths. We figured it out, and Lance took ownership of it. But I'm like, why? Something like that, you have to be cognizant enough to go, at the end of the show, I got to throw this out.
Cognizant, yes. I'm also a little concerned that there was that much blood from a mosquito bite.
If he's limping, there's more problems.
713-780-ESPN. What's the grossest thing you've seen at your workplace? 713-780-3776. We were talking off the air a little bit yesterday about Baker Mayfield, the opponent for the Texans this week, how solid he is to be the franchise quarterback there in Cleveland. The Browns have already picked up the fifth-year option on him for next season, but maybe they could be interested in one Deshaun Watson if it doesn't work out this season, or what are the long-term plans? Because usually you don't get to that last year of the deal. Usually you sign them to a big contract extension prior to that. And you made a great comparison, I thought, of what the current Cleveland quarterback situation could be versus a team around the league that had a pretty similar quarterback situation last year.
Yeah, it's the Rams all over again. If you look at it, the rest of the roster is Super Bowl ready. And at a certain point, regardless of what the contract says, they realized Jared Goff wasn't the guy. And so, as best as they could, they tried to find an immediate solution so that the rest of the team didn't go by the wayside waiting for another quarterback to develop. And it just so happened that they got Matt Stafford, and after week one, it looks like problem solved, and they are right where they wanted to be in terms of competing with the upper echelon of the NFL. This could be the exact same scenario that's getting ready to play out in Cleveland, minus the $100 million contract for Baker, because of the fact that the rest of the team is so damn good. And we've covered it over and over again. They're too deep minimum at every position. They've got more than that at wide receiver. They got two really good ones at running back. They've got two good tight ends. Their offensive line gets better and better with the draft and the way that they've kind of mixed and matched their offensive line. Defense is just continuing to rise in terms of where they rate in the NFL, because it starts with Myles Garrett, but now you put Jadeveon Clowney on the other side. Your secondary is really above average as well. If that's what they're missing, and Baker isn't able to get them where they need to go this year, at least show that he could do it, maybe they get into a shootout with Kansas City or someone in the playoffs and they lose and they go, you know what, but we saw enough. It, minus something like that happening, if Baker falters, I could see this being the Rams next year.
I'm not that high on Baker Mayfield. You know this. I liked what I saw, actually, in week one. I'm really excited to see what he is going to do over the full course of the game against the Texans, an opponent that they should dominate. And if Baker looks bad against the Texans, then we got some big problems. I'm excited, too, to watch that defense. I know that Jadeveon Clowney was kind of a failure here, but I kind of like Jadeveon Clowney, getting to know him a little bit, covering them. So I'm really excited to see how he looks with Myles Garrett, too. Going back to your point about this situation kind of looks like the Rams situation a year ago. Yeah, maybe they could be in the mix for Deshaun Watson. I think it'd be a perfect place for Deshaun Watson because, like you said, it's a turnkey organization. You put a good quarterback there, or legit Super Bowl contenders if the Baker Mayfield project doesn't work.
I will ask you this then, my friend. If indeed that Deshaun Watson could be in the mix for them, Aaron Rodgers, you know, a veteran quarterback that they're in dire need of, if you're the Houston Texans in the middle of this rebuild and you know that this is not a quarterback-heavy draft, but we said in the next couple of years, that's when you need to focus on quarterback. It doesn't have to be this year. But if part of the trade scenario, we know with Dell's Dolphins, the one thing that came out on both sides was they weren't interested in Tua. if Baker Mayfield is the guy thrown in the deal as part of the package that comes back to the Texans, are you in for that?
Yes, to an extent. Like, I'm going to give Baker Mayfield a shot. I don't know if he's a franchise quarterback, though. And if Cleveland's trading Baker Mayfield, I think the jury is out on that he's not a franchise quarterback. And if you want to compare it to even further into the Stafford-Goff situation, the Rams traded 2 firsts and a 3rd and Jared Goff for Matthew Stafford. So would you be interested in a Baker Mayfield 2 firsts and a 3rd for Deshaun Watson situation?
I think here's the key to me, Jeremy. The reason why I want to say yes, because I believe unless it's a Super Bowl caliber team, Baker Mayfield is still better than most.
And also, you have to consider where the first round pick is, though. Like, if they go 10-7 and he fizzles out in the playoffs, now that first rounder's in the 20s, and you expect them to be even better in the future because they're adding Deshaun Watson.
Here's the kicker for me. We always said this from the Russell Wilson days on. It's so much harder to win a Super Bowl and compete for a title and be a really good team when you've had to give your quarterback all that money. The fact that Baker's sitting on just one more year before you got to give him all that money on a team that's you're really trying to desperately rebuild as quickly as possible, I'm not sure that that's advantageous to the Texans. If he had a couple years left where you could still let him kind of get comfortable, mature, make some corrections to things that have been his shortcomings, maybe yes. But because it's only one more year and then you either do the Jared Goff deal, you either got to give him 100+ mil or you got to pull the chute. That's why I would say no.
I think an interesting caveat, too, would be if you know you can get another first-rounder for Baker Mayfield. Like, if you know you can flip him the very next day, kind of like a Mike Piazza situation at the deadline where he was on 3 teams in a 24-hour span. But I'm also worried about what the draft picks you're getting back are. Like, if they're in the 20s for the draft coming up, and then you know Cleveland's going to be good the next year because you're trading them to Sean, two first-round draft picks in the 20s and later, that doesn't do a whole lot for me.
Mm-mm.
You know, I need something like in the top 10.
Well, we always make the local analogy, but the local analogy here to that deal would be trading James Harden to get four picks in the 20s. It doesn't excite you like it would if those were lottery picks in the top 14. So that's another thing that once you know draft positioning, that's when it becomes hyper important for Nick Caserio and crew to realize that's going to weigh in as much or more so than whatever else you do in terms of players you bring back, because you want the highest possible draft picks you can get your hands on, because you know yours are going to be up there, but you also need others so that the rebuild happens quicker. That's why I'm paying attention to all that going, you're absolutely right. If I'm trading with the Browns, those first round picks are essentially high second round picks in a lot of ways if they have the kind of year they had a year ago.
You almost need them to be a dumpster fire this year and go like 4-13.
Which ain't happening.
It doesn't look like it's happening. It would take something, right? It would take something miraculous for them to only win like 4, 5, 6 games. Baker had nice things to say about Tyrod, by the way. He said, I think people took Tyrod for granted. I think he's an extremely good leader. I like his work ethic, just his routine, being the same guy every day for every single person in the building. It's a tremendous way of showing leadership. Tyrod's a guy that's well-respected around the league. Just one of the worst starters around the NFL, right? Somewhere 25-32 range?
Yeah, you know what? It's a fine line that's drawn in the sand, right? You have to play, and you have to be able to perform. But I think it's kind of a lost art that, on top of that, if you've mastered how to handle yourself away from the field, in the meeting rooms, in the public, in the community, that it can go a long way to building that reputation. Now, like I said, you obviously still have to perform on the field, but because throughout his career, and if you go back, you and I were talking about it yesterday off the air, when you go back to that Hard Knocks with the Browns when Baker was a rookie, he got the mobile home in the parking lot. He took Baker under his wing. He guided him through camp. He took him through all those different things that Baker had never been through before. And so that's why Baker speaks highly of him. That's just another feather in his cap to say, look, here's a guy that got stabbed in the lungs by a needle by a team doctor. That could have just, money bags could have just popped up in your eye sockets going, I can take them to the bank.
I would have never played football again.
Yeah, and instead he said, you know what, mistakes happen, no biggie, I'm not going to do anything about it. From the perspective of the Chargers, you had to go, whew. But that just shows you he's a really, really good dude.
Yeah, you won't hear anybody say bad things about Tyrod Taylor. That's why he's so coveted, even though he's somewhere on the brink of like 25-32, a bottom 5-10 starting quarterback caliber player, one of the best backups in the NFL. It's why people go after him and not Cam Newton, per se.
If you could, like, in a crystal ball, you could go back in time and then predict the ultimate backup quarterback for Deshaun Watson. Because I always said, whether it's A.J. McCarron or anybody else they used to have, you got the complete wrong concept of who your backup quarterback should be backing up at a guy as athletic and talented as Deshaun Watson. If you had it to do all over again and Tyrod Taylor was available, Tyrod Taylor is the ultimate backup quarterback for Deshaun Watson, because if he goes down or gets dinged up, guy can run the exact same offense, not maybe exactly the same way, but at least to an extent to where he can be a placeholder, like when you look at what Bridgewater was able to do with the Saints, or Jameis a year ago, what they were able to do with the Saints. That's why when the Nick Foles mold came out, in terms of it's not just about your starter, you got to have a quality backup. This is the kind of mold you're talking about. Not only do you have to have a quality backup, you got to play. You have to have a guy that can execute the system the same way.
Yeah, I thought it. That's why they brought him in. Because whenever they brought him in, you didn't know everything that was going to happen with Deshaun Watson. I thought he was going to be an expensive backup. But like you said, backup's important in the NFL. Going back to the Baker Mayfield, the idea that if he doesn't play well and perhaps they'd be interested in Deshaun Watson, would Baker Mayfield be somebody that you're interested in, Houston? 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. COVID could impact this weekend in the NFL. How? That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about my bookie. We got football tonight. NFL game on Thursday starts a very, very busy weekend as we got week 2 of college football, week 2 of the NFL. Lots of games that could be wagered on if you go to the right spot. That right spot, mybookie.ag. Why do I say that? Because I have experience with mybookie.ag. I've known about them for a long period of time, and I know a lot of things about mybookie. One thing I can tell you is your money's safe. So once you put it in, don't worry about it disappearing. It's going to be there. And if you win, they're going to pay, unlike the other sites that want you to put it back in, invest in more games, but they don't want to kick it out. That's not the case with MyBookie. If you win and you want it, you'll get it because they take care of their customers. They also take care of their customers in many ways, and this is the newest way and the latest way you can get involved. If you've bet with MyBookie before, you're in business. If you bet with MyBookie currently, you're in business. If you're new and want to sign up with MyBookie, they'll take care of you too, up to $1,000. You go right now, put some money in your account, or sign up. Up to $1,000, you put that money in your account, they're going to double whatever you put in. So if you put in $100, they're going to put $200 in your account. If you got $200 in your account, now you've got double the amount in your account, double the amount of games you can play, double your chances to win. They're going to take care of you by putting in the promo code BET975. MyBookie.ag, promo code BET975, is going to be the way that you get right where you want in terms of having money and being able to bet on games. Even if it's a game you have no interest in otherwise, it can become real interesting if you put some dollars down. Check it out. You can bet on your phone, your laptop, your tablet. It's so easy. It's so fun. And if you win, they pay. Again, BET975 is that promo code when you sign up at MyBookie.ag or add money to your account. Bet on anything, anytime, anywhere. Head right now to MyBookie.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, one of the strangest stories in the NFL this week are the Saints and how hard they've been hit with positive COVID tests within their organization. Six offensive assistants, their nutritionist, which, I mean, that sucks, right? Who's giving them the food? And then Michael Thomas, who's on the PUP list. Have all been tested positive for COVID. They're going to be without a bunch of coaches coming up on Sunday. None of them are coordinators. They're all like, you know, receivers coaches, tight end coaches, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, that's significant in my mind, especially more like during the week. I think that like on game day, it's really about the head coach, really about the coordinator. The position coaches matter, but probably not as much as the prep leading to the game. I'm really curious to see how the Saints perform on Sunday with all these guys missing.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, players play.
Sure.
So, and Sean Payton's still going to be there, so the offense is probably going to be in good hands. You don't have to worry about that. Look, if their front seven continues to play and put pressure the way that they did against Green Bay, they're probably going to be just fine there as well. Secondary's nicked up, right? Because Lattimore got the big deal, but he got hurt in the game. He's got a chip in his thumb.
Week to week. I'd be shocked if he plays, though.
But you're just getting Roby into the mix. Second half, if Rodgers could pull his head out, he had a banged up second string secondary for the most part, and Lattimore was trying to play, but you should have been able to take advantage of that. So Carolina, if it was anybody else, I'd be more concerned, but I think the back end of that defense, more so than anything, is where you're going to need to be coached up because you've got injuries, because of the fact that Darnold to Robbie Anderson was a massive connection, and that's where if you give Sam Darnold some time, he's going to pop the top on the defense, and that's where the coaching is going to be most important.
Here was Sean Payton yesterday whenever he was asked about being without a bunch of coaches this week.
Timing or the time frame on that, but they're all offensive coaches. I said to Pete today and Ronald and Zach, I said, it's like Ted Lasso, the three or four of us. The rest of them are all up in their hotel rooms and, you know, they're doing the best they can with preparation. And yet, we meet today, for instance, in bigger groups than, like, you know, spread out. But we're meeting with the receivers and the running backs and the quarterbacks as opposed to breaking out into those subgroups, just, you know, kind of covering the information.
Different week, of course. Everybody's ready to use that Ted Lasso comp. I think I'm the trendsetter there. I said it a few weeks ago, and everybody else is saying it. But
you did.
I did. Yeah, I'm the trendsetter. I'm the maverick of Ted Lasso, which you don't watch, by the way. Really good show.
He's getting over a million an episode now.
That's really good.
Yeah,
really good.
That's good money too, by the way.
Very good money.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit behind the scenes of what the Saints are dealing with. Haven't seen the number on that game. I don't think I played it. I put a lot of plays in yesterday. I don't think I touched that one. Oh, actually, I did. I gave the points, -3. So I guess I'm confident in the Saints because I think they're going to win by 3 points or more. But just interesting the fact that COVID is running rampant through the Saints offensive staff. It'll be interesting to see what effects it has this entire season as well. Have you seen this top five most passionate fan bases in the NFL? We'll go in reverse order here. Fifth, Pittsburgh. That's about one you'd expect, right? The black and gold. Four, the Cowboys. America's team, only number four. That's kind of low for me.
You know why? Because of the lack of playoff appearances and Super Bowls. The luster's worn off after 20-some-odd years.
Here's another thing, too. Like, this talks about the most passionate fan bases, not like necessarily in terms of volume or like how many Cowboy fans there are. I think a lot of Dallas and Cowboy fans, I think they're a little fair weathery. And I think being in Dallas too, like they kind of like, hey, I'm in Dallas. Like they consider themselves like LA South a little bit, to where it's more about like show than actual passion for your team. They like being at the games, they like being seen at the games, but in terms of like diehard passionate fans, eh.
Really? Dr. Dre on 290 and Crystal Collins and others.
There's some, but not that many of them.
I think there's a true passion. I think it's almost I think the fact that they get a little bit over the top and the fact that they still are hanging on to America's team when they were in the Jimmy Johnson era and they were on that run of Super Bowls and success. And when you start looking at it being 20-plus years since you got a Super Bowl, I hate to break it to you, but it ain't the same.
Yeah, it's not the same. All right, number three on this list, looking at the top five most passionate fan bases, is the Cleveland Browns, who the Texans will be in the dog pound on Sunday.
Yeah, I get that for Clevelanders.
They live and die with the Browns, though.
Sure, but that's not the national fan base. I mean, we talk about fan bases that travel, and we've seen it at NRG.
Well, it says passionate fan bases.
Okay, but I'm just saying passion also goes across the country when you're judging it in terms of the masses. You get more people if you go, you know, you see in all these different states, you've got all these different fans. When the Steelers come to Houston, the Steelers got a lot of black and gold in that crowd all over the place. Raiders are kind of like that, too. You know, there's certain teams that travel well. There's one that I'm very biased to that I'll hold off on, but that in my very biased opinion is the greatest fan base in terms of loyalty across the country. But there's multiples, and you see that when they travel.
See, I guess the word passionate's relative, right? It depends on how you view it, because I view it more as like living and dying by your team. Maybe you can't afford the means to travel, can't go to all the games, but it just like ruins your Sunday when they lose. You're thinking about it all week. Number two on the list was New Orleans, which totally makes sense. Saints are huge in New Orleans, and any Saints fans, even if they're not in the city of New Orleans. And then number one, the Green Bay Packers, they wear cheese on their head. Of course they are the most passionate fan base in the NFL.
I don't know if it's because they wear cheese on their head, but the thing that, like I said, is a barometer is I've been to games all across the NFL on the road. I try to make one road game minimum a year, and whether you go to Dallas, I went to San Diego before they moved to L.A., I've been all these different places, and it's amazing to me. Look at Jacksonville last week, right? So it's a last-minute thing. They moved the Saints-Packers game to Jacksonville. 40,000 Packer fans. That's ridiculous. Like, what other fan base is going into Jacksonville besides the Jags and going to put 40,000 in the building on short notice? So that's the thing that I'm most proud of is the passion that's behind. It's like when the Astros were back in the National League. When the Cardinals and the Cubs came to town, and the Braves, because of the old Superstation days. Those were three teams you could guarantee you were going to have Astros fans fighting to get tickets with the visiting team fans because they were coming from all over the place.
Yeah. So those are the five most passionate fan bases. 713-780-ESPN. Did we slight your team? Is your team not on the list? 713-780-3776. Nick said, fake news, Jeremy. Ride or die with the boys. We've been in the playoffs, Joel. We got effed by the Dez catch. We've been in the playoffs.
It was a catch, but by the way, as I always tell Cowboy fans, and most of them that are rational Cowboy fans agree with me, yes, it was a catch. I was there in person. I saw it, and I give him credit. Also, you had Aaron Rodgers with three timeouts and more than enough time on the clock, only down a field goal. You probably wouldn't have won.
Yeah. I wonder what percentage of Houston, like what their alliance is. Because let's assume that of the football fans in Houston, let's say 10% of them are probably transplants, right? Like it's such a diverse city that you probably have a smorgasbord of Minnesota fans, Green Bay fans, Chicago fans, whatever. I would say of the football fans in Houston, would you put it like 60, 65, 70% that are Texans fans?
I would say 80%.
80? That's higher than I thought.
I think 80% Texans fans. Now, that doesn't mean that they're also not fans of the team because there are so many transplants. I think a lot, like me, look, I'm a diehard Green Bay Packer fan, but unless the Texans are playing the Packers, I want the Texans to win every week. I think there's a lot of people that have been transplanted from other places that love to see the Texans and want to see them win. It's just that they still have an allegiance to a different team.
Yeah, I think there's a good chunk of Cowboy fans in this city. There's no doubt about that. I think there's a really good chunk of New Orleans fans in this city, too. And if I'm looking at an NFC team and who I root for more, it's New Orleans over Dallas, right? I like the I used to love the Saints whenever they had even back to the Aaron Brooks days.
No, I did, too. I used to work for the Saints doing security at their training camps when they had them in Wisconsin. And one of my...
You were the muscle, huh?
I was one of the security guys. I was great money to make just walking around on the practice fields and keeping the crowds around.
You were the guy protecting the 6'5", 300-pound offensive lineman.
But the equipment manager and his son, Tony Simmons, Dan Simmons was the equipment manager for the Saints. Tony played tight end at Purdue eventually, but he and I became friends, and I was always a Saints fan. I wasn't watching the Packers.
Yeah, I like Sean Payton. I loved Breeze. I'm actually a big Jameis Winston fan for some reason, too. I don't even know why. All right, coming up next, history made in the NBA and a Woj truth bomb about John Wall and also a star player retiring in the NBA. All that next, Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, want to tell you about my good friends at Apollo Men's Health. Love these people, starting with Dr. O and his staff. You know why? Because they've changed my life. They changed it in a positive way because I really was kind of just letting myself go. I wasn't taking care of myself the right way. I didn't have all the information I used to have or the desire with family and other commitments to do the things I used to do working out. I met with Dr. O. I talked to his staff. I got on a program. I started working out again. And boy, have they made a difference. They can do the same thing for you. Your health is your wealth. You got to invest in yourself. And they start with Apollo Men's Health, two locations near downtown Houston. All you got to do is make that first appointment, then be honest when they ask you the tough questions. If you give them honest answers, they're going to get you where you need to go. If you're a man or a woman, you want to try hormone therapy, they have multiple ways that you can get involved and get into that. If you get into it, what you're going to get out of it is feeling like you were in your heyday, again, in a time where you thought you could never get back to feeling that way, 20s, 30s, most athletic time of your life. That can help you get there. If you want to work out again, do a full body composition analysis. And what they do is use that to chart your progress. It tells you where you are. You can tell them where you need to go, and then you can watch on a weekly basis how you make progress to get there. If you want to recover quicker, HGH peptide therapy, and so many more ways they can help. Check them out by going to apollomh.com. Book your first appointment. Most major insurance is accepted. Discounts for military personnel and first responders. Mention my name, Joel Blank. Free B12 shot on your first visit, and then let the process go from there. Like I said, if you're honest with them, they'll get a program for you. Check them out today. It's the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
History made in the NBA. First women NBA play-by-play TV announcer. Your Milwaukee Bucks, or your former Milwaukee Bucks,
yeah.
Lisa Byington, named the TV voice for the Bucks. Their longtime TV voice retiring. The radio voice retired, too. Kind of interesting.
Ted Davis.
But, hey, NBA history. We saw it yesterday. I've heard Lisa Byington. I think she does a great job. I think she'll be good in Milwaukee.
She did Summer League with Isaiah Thomas, right?
She did some Summer League with Isaiah Thomas.
Yep.
She did. I think she did some, like, Big Ten TV, too.
I think she grew up a Pistons fan. I remember some of the stories she was talking with Zeke about. Interesting move by the Bucks, but you know what? I'm not going to say I'm a big fan of Beth Mowins. I'm a fan of Jess Mendoza. Some people aren't. I love Jess Mendoza doing baseball games. I think she knows her stuff.
I think she's pretty good. My favorite woman announcer is Doris Burke.
I was going to say, and Doris Burke is the creme de la creme. She knows her stuff. She's got the ear of the players, and I think she's great. So I call it like I see it because that's what I did for years with the Rockets. I'll be interested to see how this goes, but I think it's a better move for them to make than when they tried to hit the home run with Gus Johnson a few years ago. And I told you, when you bring in a guy that doesn't live there and doesn't focus and dial into what they're trying to do, and you mispronounce sponsor names, and you're kind of there, and then certain games you're not, you either got to be all in or get out, in my opinion, for the local telecast. So from that standpoint, I'll be interested, but kudos to the Bucks for taking a big leap.
She did the tournament, too, for CBS, which I thought she was good at, too. I think she's going to be really good whenever she has a bunch of games to do. I mean, 82 games in the NBA schedule. They're not all on TV, but she's probably doing upwards of 70 games. I thought she wasn't doing enough and, like, getting enough reps when she was doing the tournament and what she was doing before then. Mm-hmm. But I think the NBA regular season and doing so many games is going to make her a better play-by-play announcer. I think it was a good hire by the Bucks and like seeing history made in the NBA. What do you think of the move? 713-780-3776.
Speaking of that kind of thing, Jeremy, have we heard anything on the Rockets naming their new analyst on TV? Because time's a ticking. We're almost at training camp. Right after that, we got preseason games. What the hell's taking so long?
What's the hurry? I mean, as long as there's somebody there for the first preseason game, yeah.
But that's the typical Rocket way of doing things, waiting until the last minute lately. I would like to see them at least let the people know and so that they can get prepared for what's to come because, I mean, look, it's a big transition. I'm a little biased again because I hired Matt Bullard as an intern, trained him on Comets games, hired both him and Craig, and I liked the dynamic that they had as a team. So I was a little sad to see Bull go. So now I'm interested to see which direction they're going to go going forward. And with the season, like training camp this month, I mean, the Bucks just did this and announced their new TV voice. Why can't the Rockets do it, too?
I guess Ackerman's just going to do it all. Ackerman's going to go solo TV like he was doing solo radio
for a
while.
Clean up on aisle five.
I love Craig.
I do, too.
Speaking of the Rockets, the John Wall situation. What kind of I find comical about all of this is like how suddenly the Rockets are interested in trading John Wall. And it kind of goes back to the Deshaun thing about how the national media is always like way behind of the local media with the news. Everybody knows that the Rockets are trying to trade John Wall. They've been trying to trade John Wall for a while. There's just not any sort of takers. And Woj had a little bit of a truth bomb about this too. As he said, I think trading John Wall with 2 years left and over $90 million is almost impossible unless the Rockets all of a sudden decide that they're willing to attach a number of first-round picks, and I don't see that scenario. This is something you've been saying all along.
Yeah, it's what I continue to say, too, although I would never say never because I never thought Chris Paul was tradable, except Daryl Morey did what Woj just talking about and attached a whole bunch of picks. Now, thanks to Daryl Morey leaving the cupboard bare before he got out of town, you don't have the surplus of picks that you could possibly use. Plus, as you and I talked about yesterday, you need these picks because that is the ultimate resource to continue to fortify this young roster. You need to get guys out of the draft that come out early, that you can develop along with the four 19-year-olds you got and KPJ and Martin. You need to develop those guys so that some of them become the stars that you think they can be, and if not them, someone else that you already have or you need to go get, and you continue to build that rotation. If you give up all those picks, now you're going to have to overspend in free agency and try and get young, which is very hard to do, young free agents that are going to come here and fortify this roster. And that's much more difficult to do. That's why they can't. He's absolutely right in something, like you said, I've been harping on. You can't give up any more picks.
The Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook trade on a scale of badness on 1 to 10, where does it rank?
Well, I think that the biggest thing of where it ranks is the fact that the Daryl Morey was convinced and James Harden was convinced Chris Paul had nothing left.
I thought that too.
And the fact that when you saw Chris Paul in the last 2 years, he had plenty left. I mean, what he did for an Oklahoma City team that was supposed to be a lottery team, taking the Rockets to 7 games, was incredible. And then to follow that up, another new start, new team, try to do it again, almost daring him, like, you can't do this 2 years in a row. And he takes the Suns to the finals after they haven't been to the playoffs in forever. That's what makes it worse. I think that I was shocked when they made the move because my initial reaction was, wow, oh my God, not only could they move him, but they got a guy that used to be an MVP that seems to still have plenty left in the tank. they may have finally won a big trade. When normally you say you trade a franchise type player, you never get equal value in return. They actually may have won this one. And then thanks to James Harden and others, it didn't work out in the end.
So you liked the trade at the time, and then in hindsight, you realized it was a bad trade. It's where I liked the trade at the time, too. I thought it could work, and I thought Chris Paul was done. Proved me wrong. In hindsight, it's easy to look back and say, whoa, the Rockets really lost that one. They got a lesser player, and they also attached all these draft picks to it. Like I was going to compare it to the DeAndre Hopkins trade. The DeAndre Hopkins trade never really made any sense. Like, you can understand the logic, maybe, if you try really hard that you don't want to overpay a wide receiver, that there was a contract dispute, and that there's not, like, these, like, teams usually don't have great teams that win Super Bowls and stuff like that. Sometimes they go by committee at with the wide receiver spot. So, like, you can try to make some sense of the philosophy. The return was just so bad that everybody hated it from the start. The Russell Westbrook Chris Paul trade, in hindsight, it looks really, really bad. But at the time, I think the city was kind of torn 50-50 whether they liked it or not.
Can I ask you, because since we've been teamed, I haven't gotten this far with you on this topic. Who won the Harden trade?
Well, I think, I mean, to me, anybody who gets the best player wins the trades in the NBA. Okay. I don't think the Rockets could have won that trade no matter what. They could have made, maybe they could have lessened the impact of losing the trade. Maybe they could have lost it by less. But you weren't winning the James Harden trade no matter which package you took.
Okay, so then follow-up would be, but did they get enough?
I don't think you were ever going to get enough, though.
Okay, but did you? They get the best package they could have gotten?
Probably not. I don't hate pick swaps, though. Because, like, what if the Nets just, like, fall on their face in 3 years? And things happen fast in sports. But pick swaps, I think, have more value than people are willing to admit.
Right, but it's going to be valued towards the other team more likely because you're going to have a worse record than Oklahoma City and some of the
other teams.
You're
probably not going to use them.
And you're not going to get the swaps to go your direction. On top of that, the picks that you got in return are going to be in the 20s because the Nets and the Bucks are going to be good. So you're going to get, at best, role players if they turn out into anything.
But you could package them, perhaps.
And then the fact that you didn't keep Allen, you didn't get LeVert, you didn't keep the guys that could have given you a nucleus that immediately would have turned it around for you.
LeVert doesn't do a ton for me, Allen does. Allen's the one where I felt like he should have been a Houston Rocket. I think LeVert's like in the final year of his deal, too. So you're going to have to make a decision on paying him before you're really ready to win.
He's making 17 last year, 17 or 18 this year, and I think he's got one more left. But regardless, he was very affordable. And there's a guy you'd want to extend because the numbers he's been putting up since he's been in Indiana have been fantastic.
It didn't make sense to me that you flipped LeVert for Oladipo.
Olynyk. So basically, yeah, the trade got worse and worse.
That was a money thing, though.
Well, I say all that to say this. Rafael Stone was going to be graded, like we talked with all the general managers, on the first big move. So he's already on the clock for that one. The pressure of this John Wall trade sits firmly on Rafael Stone yet again, and you and I discussed this the other day. Now, Tillman Fertitta is going to be breathing down his neck going, I want you to get rid of him because that contract's killing me, but only if we get a chunk of money back from him and we buy him out, or we get rid of him without putting ourselves in a bigger bind. And that's why Rafael's going to face the most pressure of anybody because of the fact that now they've reached this agreement that he wants out.
I think what you said yesterday is the smartest thing I've heard in regards to trading John Wall is that Stone's not going to be graded on what he receives back for John Wall. He's going to be graded on how much he saves on that John Wall contract, the 90-something million over the next 2 years. Kyrie Irving, apparently, he's always in trade rumors, it seems like. Kyrie Irving making it known that if he gets traded by Brooklyn, could retire from the NBA. Just be done with it. And if anybody's going to do it, it'd be Kyrie Irving. Say,
if this was anybody else, you'd be like, what? But for Kyrie, you'd be like, yeah, I can see that. Yeah, I can honestly see that. Yeah, that's the thing to me. It's Kyrie. And I don't know how much he's going to see it through. And then, of course, he could always change his mind back again after he contemplates it. Because, by the way, that's a whole lot of money to walk away from. But it's just Kyrie being Kyrie, and that's not a good thing.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't see the Nets trading him, though.
Let us know Greg Popovich is out as USA basketball coach. Not surprising. At his age, off seasons mean so much more. You know, they're trying to rebuild a Spurs team, and that's taken a ton of time. And like I said, because he's like in the back nine of his career and the back nine of life, he doesn't need that extra BS.
Who do you want to see coach USA?
I think Jeff Van Gundy.
That's who I was going to say.
I think Jeff Van Gundy, because he's been working with the 19 and under team, he's been doing some things with USA Basketball for quite a while now, and he's established that relationship. I think Jeff Van Gundy would be great for that.
Yeah, I think Jeff Van Gundy would be awesome if he was named the U.S. Men's National Team Basketball Coach. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We're live on Twitch each and every day, twitch.tv/ESPN975. On Twitter, he's at Pac-Man Joel, getting into arguments with our listeners, and I'm at Jeremy Branham. Coming up next, Justin Verlander's brother joined the Wheelhouse and some interesting things that he had to say. That's next, Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.